Hello, dear listeners, and welcome again to Season 5 of Food Conversations. Before we begin, of course, we once again acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Squamic people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Now, today I am delighted to welcome into our studio someone who is playing a critical role in training a new generation of young Canadians to understand food in all its aspects and how we get food from the farm to the kitchen and onto the table. I'm talking about Nimmi Erasmus, the popular culinary arts teacher at Salmon Arm Secondary based on the Sullivan campus. Nimmi has a wealth of formal training and practical experience in food preparation. She blends the food cultures of two continents, the Indian subcontinent and North America, and spices them both up to create a heady flavor that will stimulate both your taste buds and your mind and leave you hungry for more. Welcome, Nimmi, to Food Conversations.
Thank you very much, Warren. Good morning to all our listeners today.
Now, that's the most food puns I've ever used on the show. I feel a little bit like the host of CBC's The Debaters. Anyway, I hope, dear listeners, that you will forgive me for this indulgence. Now, let's start off with a word about tea. Not the letter, but the beverage. A beverage that's popular all around the world on both sides of the Atlantic and the Pacific, but is particularly important in the culture of India, which is your home country. You told me, Nimmi, that tea is the language or a language of love. What does tea mean in your life and the life of anybody from India, as well as a few people on this side of the Atlantic and Pacific too?
Tea brings hope. tea is something that is rooted in Indian culture. Of course, it's widely used in almost every meal before, after. I think a cup of chai goes a very long way. It takes you through the day, takes your mind off things. It is a part of my teaching kitchen. All my kids were in tea. They're allowed to drink endless cups of tea.
When they're cooking in the kitchen?
Yes, of course.
Fantastic. That's probably why they come. They come for the chai.
Even if you don't have anything, we have tea in our kitchen, that's for sure.
So when you go back to India, what's the first thing you do when you get out of the airport?
Drink a cup of chai. Find the nearest tea stall and drink one cup of good chai.
Tells you you're home.
I'm home.
Now, I should ask you a question, because this always troubles me. Loose tea versus tea bags. What's your educated opinion on the subject?
Educated. I'm really a teaholic, so chai is made from loose tea. It has to be made the proper way. It has to have ginger in it. It has to have cardamom in it. It has to have a little bit of milk. And, of course, a bit of sugar goes a long way as well. It depends what kind of tea you drink.
I just started drinking loose tea a few years ago, and I find it very hard to go back to tea bags.
I can do both at any time of the day.
You're a true teaholic.
Yes,
just
indeed.
As long as it's tea.
As long as it's tea.
Now, your territory in Salmon Arm, in the school system, is the teaching kitchen at Sullivan campus of Salmon Arm Secondary.
Correct.
And culinary arts is an elective for students.
Yes.
Now, you've also, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, that you've been a student as well as a teacher in that particular domain. So why don't you describe this kitchen? I've looked at it on the internet, and it looks amazing, and it was behind you when you were speaking to me before. Describe this kitchen. It's a wonderful thing.
This kitchen is my home. I don't know how else to describe that. I think it is a privilege, number one, to be working at SAS, and to return home as an alumni and to be able to bring students to the table through food. I think it's really an honor to be there. I work with some of the most amazing humans, and my teaching kitchen was my mentor's kitchen. So I'm a grad from the program, a grad from SAS, and I really think it was a blessing to be able to return home to equip and educate the next generation.
So is it a big room? Is it a got an awful lot of stainless steel in it.
It is polished stainless steel. We keep it very clean. It is a fairly big kitchen, actually, but we don't have that much equipment in it. We manage to feed our school and community from a four-top stove, a small range, and we don't have a deep fryer, so that's something that I
you got dispense rid of. With.
I did. The first year I was here, it was gone. So we are able.
Was that because it's not particularly healthy to do a lot of deep frying?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something that I didn't want our community to just get used to eating burgers and fries.
And that kitchen's been there for nearly a quarter century.
Yes, it's like 22 years old. Chef put that kitchen in, so this is Chef's program before mine.
And you have about 100 students?
Ish, yes.
Ish, and they're grade 11 and 12.
Grade 11 and 12.
So what would be a typical day? I know that when we were talking before, the students were just about to descend on the kitchen.
Just about to arrive. They make their presence known.
They do. So what's the sort of typical trajectory in the kitchen?
So our classes really start from 9:15 in the morning to go to 3:30. And we have about a 40-minute lunch. So lunch goes at 12 to 12:40. And we have breakfast that is served at 10:30. So 9:15, by the time the kids come, we do a rundown. If I remember to do announcements, then that happens. If not, we go ahead. And we get on with the day. It's very busy, Warren. We are a working teaching kitchen. We have about seven stations within that kitchen. Teacher assistants, leaders take the run and they run the show. We have training in the first few weeks of opening in September when school opens. There's formal training that happens. Every student has to go through it. And then we cook, we create, we have fun. it's busy. And because we have deadlines to meet, it's really important that food gets out in time and it's served hot. And we have lineups. By 10:15, there's kids standing at the door and teachers standing at the door. We need to get back to classes. Give us our food.
We're hungry. Where does the food go in the educational settings? Is it just in Sullivan?
It depends. I mean, we started at Sullivan and then people got to know our food. And we, I'll talk about this later. We have a pretty amazing program, a family meal program, which is now spread out within the community. But yes, our priority is taking care of our students at Sullivan.
And there's the sense I get from what you're saying now and what you said before is that it's really engaged in communities. It's performing almost a service for the students, of course, but also for the community at large.
Well, I look at it as an act of love. So, yes, our entire community, we're a family at SAS. Everyone takes care of everybody. It doesn't matter what kind of a day, everyone is welcome to the table you're having. And so I think that's the goal of this program, is to take care, to feed, to educate our students and look after each other.
I remind listeners that I'm speaking today with Nimi Erasmus, who is the culinary arts teacher at Salmon Arm Secondary in the Sullivan campus. Now, the kitchen is also affiliated with a larger organization called the BC Agriculture in the Classroom Organization. We were talking about this before the show, about getting that acronym straight, and I'm happy to say I think I got it straight.
Yes,
you gave
you
me
did.
A thumbs up. Now, this is an interesting group. It was started in 1992 by farmers and teachers and just enthusiasts about food. And now it's got 500,000 students in British Columbia who are in some way touched or affected by this organization. Why don't you give a little bit of rundown of what you see the role of the BCAITC, BC Agriculture in the Classroom. What does it do and how does it kind of enhance what you are doing?
Well, I think this is a fantastic organization. They're really for education in the classroom, and that is obviously derived through food. And so it has impacted not just our school, but so many communities within British Columbia. And I have just, because I came here from Surrey, we weren't a part of it when I was teaching in Surrey. And so when I came to SAS and I got to know other chef instructors in the province, they got to know us pretty fast. And I started getting educated on this program itself. And so I'm still learning where they're affiliated, who are the farmers that support this. But I think it's an incredible way of bringing communities together. Yeah. And their provisions, they don't just bring you herbs. They bring you all sorts of wonderful things that you would not normally find.
I heard about whole ducks.
Ducks come in. The last shipment was cheese from Jerseyland Organics. Jersey Organics. We had like a beautiful, expensive cheese, yeah. not just cheddar, like Asiago, and very expensive cheese.
It's serious cheese.
We got turkey a few weeks ago, so we were able to do a turkey lunch, and it's all free for our students. So, and they send shipments of it. It's not just a small case. They'll
and
send it, you
what,
lots.
Five times a year or something like that?
Five, six times a year, yes, yeah. Right throughout the year.
And I noticed that they're also affiliated with all the kinds of relevant ministries like the BC Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Fisheries, Ministry of Education, and of course, the Coalition for Healthy School Food, which is a national organization. So they're pretty well tied into the whole process of food and education and, you know, basically a new generation of humans who can really understand what food's all about. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that other organization, the Coalition for Healthy School Food, which is a national organization, the biggest one in Canada. It's got somebody like 250 members and organizations in every province in the territory. Do they play a role directly, or is they just kind of a background amalgamation of organizations that are involved in food? Do you see much of them, or are they just there helping out, fomenting better food and better education?
I think they're in the background. I mean, our role as chef educators is to equip our students with every possible skill we can within the hospitality sector, and of course, culinary arts. This program within the Ministry of Education has changed its name a few times, and now we've finally settled to culinary arts, which I think is very good because we can take those ideas and incorporate it into the curriculum and really live it out. So they play a background role, and BCATC, and we are part of a program called Take a Bite of BC.
Yes, indeed. So. And there was an event recently in March called The Great Big Crunch. Did any of your students crunch? The whole point was to make a loud crunching noise.
My students make a lot of noise as is. There's plenty of
they
crunches.
Don't need any help.
No, we're good there.
Well, I certainly feel that there is a change afoot with respect to food and food preparation and where things are going. Now, your own story, like that of many guests on this show, is a long and winding road. It includes and a few air travel experiences. You were born and raised in India, but in a unique community, a little community called Mussoorie, and you had at the foot of the Himalayas, very beautiful, and your parents in that community were teachers at a school, the Woodstock International School. Tell listeners a little bit about that school and your home.
Woodstock will forever be my home. It is where I spend really my childhood, and I was very privileged to attend a school like Woodstock School. It is unique. It's one of the most recognized schools in the world. It is one of the top institutions for international baccalaureate programs, and I... It is my home. Woodstock is a very long conversation. It's and the people, the community that Woodstock has is worldwide.
What kind of a setting is it? It's quite a beautiful setting.
It really is. So Woodstock School spreads over a few hills, and it's a Christian residential international school. So we had kids from all over the world, K-12. I was a day scholar there because my parents work there. My mom, of course, is a teacher still. And my dad took care of all the supplies coming through to the school from various sources. We had different campuses, different settings. I don't know how to describe Woodstock to you. It's very unique.
Why don't you tell listeners what you did when you weren't in school? Did you run around in the hills? Did you?
Oh yes, we had so much fun. So of course, friends from all over the world. You got to know kids from everywhere. Some students coming from quite elite backgrounds, made my own community, really, friends that have walked with me throughout my life. And yeah, we would go shopping, we'd go out in the hills, we'd just spend our time literally lazing around the home. You know, everything's really taken care of for you.
What was it like having students from all over the world in terms of affecting your perspective on your life? You were meeting people who would tell you stories about their cultures and their lives in other parts of the world. How did that influence you?
I think Woodstock was really unique because now when you travel, you call up somebody and someone's going to open their door to you somewhere. It was amazing. I think it's played a big role on who I am. Woodstock was my foundation with education. They are very driven, you know, and I think just meeting people and getting to know people. My best friend is from Tibet. And she's currently in the States right now. But just having that culture and really heightened my interest in also pursuing culinary.
You were also able to get a free education, which in India is not available necessarily to everybody beyond a certain point. That must have given you a bit of a leg up, as they say, in terms of just having a high quality education that was very securely available to you?
For sure. I think, of course, that has changed over the years in India. India pushes for education. They are renowned for the kind of education platform they have. And I think I was privileged to be able to get free education in a school like Woodstock, which has a name internationally. Yeah. I think
that was the key thing.
That was a key thing, and that community and the influence they've had, and the people we met, including my godparents, who used to come from Salmon Arm and visit Woodstock.
Really?
And so that we built that connection, and you know, they are still a huge part of our lives.
Now
they helped us come to Canada.
How did you find godparents in Salmon Arm?
So our neighbors were Canadians. In Woodstock, teachers from Canada.
Of course, and that's the obvious thing.
They came to Missouri to teach high school, actually, I think. And so my godmom's cousin was our next-door neighbor, and she happened to come to Woodstock School in Missouri and met mom and dad right there, and I was, I think, 9 when I met her. So that was just a connection, and we've been lifelong friends.
All this must have given you a very broad view of where things happen in the world. The sense that there's a global culture almost, especially around food.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, India is so rich in food. You get everything there. There's no shortage of anything. Very extensive, rich Indian culture. Even though I attended a school like Woodstock and I had friends from all over the world, it was the culture that was unique that really drew me to following a dream.
And did your fellow students who came from elsewhere, did they have a chance to sort of be immersed in Indian culture as well so that they could appreciate what you appreciate and then take it back when they went home?
100%. Our graduation ceremony, all the students till date wear saris and grad. Whether you're coming from Canada, Korea, you know, Japan, anywhere. And on Independence Day, the Indian flag is hoisted, even though this is an American international school. So a very unique, very, very unique culture.
Mm, wonderful. Now, you did, in 2000, you and your family came to this part of the world where your godparents. And I was wondering how that's a very specific destination.
Yes.
And many people come to this country sort of, generally speaking, not knowing where they're going to end up. But you have quite a goal. And you came and you enrolled first at Shoe Swap School and then Salmon Arm Secondary. But you were working part-time in the Rio Grande restaurant, Mexican restaurant.
Yes, Warren, you're sharing all my secrets.
I am sharing all your secrets. Well, no, I'm not sharing all your secrets.
That's okay.
Just the appropriate secrets. But it's interesting that you were working in a restaurant while you were going to school. What was that like working in a first taste of the food industry?
I loved it. Hmm. It was my dream to become a chef. I was 8 years old when I was...
When you pronounced your
Yes,
your
and
decision.
My parents looked at me really weirdly and awkwardly, and how do we get her out of this situation? No, I loved cooking. I've grown up in, like I said, in a very extensive, rich Indian culture for both sides. I've spent my entire, really, childhood between grandparents and around food and family, and so that was ingrained in me since day one. Mm. And when I came to SMS, Shoe Shop Middle School, I was in my second semester, grade 9, and I loved it. And I think, again, Woodstock had a big role to play, the backbone of just fitting in, no problem, mm-hmm. no issues.
Yeah, you had different culture was all around you as you were growing up.
Of course, and
what a gift.
Thank you. And when I went to SAS, I had a chance of actually enrolling in chef training, it was called back then. And so being able to get that mentorship and training was sort of instrumental to going to culinary school afterwards.
Who was your mentor back then?
Chef Alex Varga. He still is my mentor.
I think the name is quite well known in food circles, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes. Chef is now at Jackson.
Yes, wonderful. Then you graduated, and a decision was made that you would continue your studies with related to food. And you went to Calgary to the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, SAITE, as it's called. What made SAITE the place for you to go to?
The program and the chefs. SAITE, I think, created that discipline and gave us a very firm foundation on the culinary world.
You're going to remind listeners that I'm speaking with Nimi Erasmus, who's the culinary arts teacher at Salmon Arm Secondary, and is now talking about Calgary, which people don't think of as a base for culinary arts necessarily. But in the food world, do people get to know who's really good, who's a good teacher, who's got a good reputation? Is that something? You said there were teachers there.
There were profs. Our profs were at SAITE. So I did the PCK 1 and 2 program, which is professional cooking. And our teachers really geared us up. Our profs geared us up for the industry world. They prepared you like there's no tomorrow. So
you were prepared for success when you got
out
of school.
Well, I wouldn't say prepared for success. You're never really prepared for success. You have to make that on your own. Life teaches you that. Experiences teach you that. But I went to culinary school, so training and in the industry, how the industry works. And then, of course, when you walk into the industry, it's quite different to what you've learned in school.
What's the biggest difference?
You work really long hours. Mm. You have to deal with everything, really. I think your skills are really put to test, depending where you are. Again, I've been very, very blessed, Warren, that I've had excellent mentors, excellent chefs that have really coached me into the role I'm in now, even. So.
When you graduated, you were 20 when you had your red seal, which is seems to be pretty early in life. Then you went on to hotels. And what a place to go for your apprenticeship, the Banff Springs Hotel.
The Fairmont, yes.
What was that like? It's a pretty posh sort of place.
It's still posh. It's Fairmont is an elite chain and globally, actually, very well respected. It was incredible. There's 15 different kitchens there, from the golf course to in-room dining. And I think it was, again, a very key, instrumental in my development. There's about 150 cooks and chefs there. I may have that number wrong. I'm not sure if it's gone up or gone down.
That's a big number.
Yeah,
whatever.
It's a very big hotel. It's a very popular hotel, and a major tourist attraction because it's a castle in the Rockies.
That's right.
And I think yes, it was a privilege to work for the Fairmont chain.
What did you learn there that was unique to that particular setting?
Everything, because we used to serve anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 guests a day, and that was just in one part of the hotel. So we got to learn all the stations. I hated making breakfast. I was done with eggs by the time I was 22. I'm like, I never want to see an egg in my life.
Important skill testing question. Do people in India eat eggs for breakfast?
Yes, of course they do.
Well, they do. Okay, well, I thought you were going to say no.
No, of course they do.
But they don't cook them the same way?
They cook them all sorts of ways. And they do cook them the same way.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. That means that anyone who travels to India will know that they can order, I don't know, scrambled eggs.
You can order anything in India and it'll be catered for you.
Now, you also worked in Calgary at Marriott and correct. Other places. And in fact, you started a little restaurant up when you were 22.
I worked for somebody else.
Yes. So, but you participated in the startup of restaurant.
Yes, a couple. But it was part of training. I did really short-term contracts everywhere I worked. I would really get bored after a while. Mm. It's just, I need to move.
Is that what most chefs do, that you go from place to place picking up the different individual sort of gestalt, if you like, of each restaurant and or kitchen setting?
I think you do that until you are settled, until you have an exec chef or a sous chef or some title that you feel that you're settled or in a place where you can make it your own. This industry is beautiful because you never stop learning, much like the field of education. You never stop learning.
Yes, we hope not. Absolutely. Somewhere around that time, around in your early 20s, you came back to Samhar. What was it made you say, let's go back to that little town where I finished my education?
Somehow I always land up in Samhar. I came back. I was working at Table 24.
Table 24, yes.
And I was a sous chef there. And I came back for a bit of a break. Mm-hmm. It had been a lot of hustle bustle, moving around. I was a bit tired. At 21, I was a bit tired.
And what was it like coming back to a small community and compared to Banff Springs and the Marriott in Calgary, this is a pretty small location. What mm-hmm. was that like coming back to this much more intimate sort of community embedded restaurant?
It's home, right? And home is your safety net. Mm. It's a place where you can come and be at peace. And so for me, I was in a transition. I was moving around and I came home because my parents are here. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed on here. I worked for a little bit and then moved to UK.
You moved to UK.
Yes, sir.
What drew you to United Kingdom?
Well, my partner was there, mm-hmm. and so we moved there. His job was stable at that point there,
right.
So we just lived there for some time.
And for 5 years?
For five years.
You did various things when you were in the European venue, obviously, but after 5 years, you came back. At that point, you had a daughter on the way.
I have a beautiful daughter.
Yes, indeed, a beautiful daughter. And what, when you came back to Canada, what was the plan? Did you have a plan, or were you just going to the next phase and seeing where it would take you?
Well, I returned home. I brought my daughter home, relocated back to Canada, and that was a different phase. And I think that was it's all part of a very big story. And
but that's where you started to teach.
I started to teach here in in Surrey.
Yes, at the Pacific Academy, which yes. interestingly for our listeners was started up by Jimmy Patterson in 1985. Mm-hmm. And it's a designated Christian school, but it's also quite, it's like the Woodstock School. It's expanded and become quite an interesting international kind of institution as well.
Yes. A very elite school. Mm. There's several schools like that down at the coast. And my daughter, of course, had admission there. I was teaching culinary arts. I took over a mat leave position. I was sitting in my godparents' home applying for work because I just needed a break from Salmon Arm. So I went there and I just happened to apply for this job. And I called up my mom and she goes, "Why did you apply for this?" and I said, I don't know. And
that's the best reason.
And I got called for an interview and I was like, why did I get called? I am coming from a completely different background here. And it sort of was a calling. And when I went to Pacific Academy, that really set my note for teaching. And the kids there were absolutely amazing, just like they are here in Salmon Arm. And they really pushed me to finish that degree and come and teach.
Who did?
The students.
The students.
My students.
So what did they tell you?
You got this and you should teach and come back and teach us. I fell in love with teaching there. Mm. And of course I come from a family where education is heightened and my mother's an educator.
At this point did your parents say, finally, instead of the thoughts they expressed when you were at Woodstock at 8 years old and said, I want to be a chef, it was like, oh, you can be a chef and a teacher. That's acceptable.
My parents are wonderful. They have never stopped us from striving for what we want to do. They've always pushed for that. And I, if anything, I admire my mom as a teacher. She's an incredible educator. She's extremely gifted, extremely talented, extremely educated. So for me, she's really been a role model educator. And we speak the same language now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of like coming full circle.
Really, it is.
Yeah. So you did your stint in Surrey, but then you came back even closer to your roots, back to Salmon Arm. Mm-hmm. Now, how did you negotiate that engagement with the senior secondary? How did that work out? The principal, you told me, was pretty supportive. Who is that? Was that Ron Sullivan?
No, it's Mr. Cadden.
Okay, right. Yes,
he's our principal. Yes, he's our wonderful principal, and he's, you know, he's all for the kids. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all for the kids. So, Chef was retiring, and we had several conversations, and I told him I am never returning back to Salmon Arm. I'm good in Surrey. I'm not coming back home. I'm good, and here I am.
Never say never.
Never say never, And Chef retired, and I applied for the position, and here I am.
So you swallowed your pride or your resolution and said, well, why not?
I think, again, the fact that I was returning home mm-hmm. and to my home school, there's a different sense of love and joy for that.
And you even went further because you started around then to look into formal training in teaching.
Correct.
TRU.
Yes.
Was that just a natural step that seemed to fall into place?
Yes, but I really want to dive further into culinary arts and be able to impact lives. And so for me, learning as much as I can and furthering my education, which I will continue to do even after mm-hmm. I get my ed degree, is important for me because I think it's a crucial part of the development for these kind of programs.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that in a minute because I think that is an important subject. You came back to this school and you wanted to put your stamp on the culinary arts program and define it and shape it the way that your values told you was a good way to do it?
To a certain extent, like I said, I think we're very blessed to be able to be working for SD83, for one. We have a fantastic faculty there. And then to be able to serve your home community and to stand in that teaching kitchen, it's really like an honor every day. Mm. And for me to be able to be supported by not just a wonderful administration with SD83, but a fantastic administration at our school that are supportive of our students within this program, that they promote these kind of programs, elective mm-hmm. programs, trades. I think that just sort of gave me more push to continue doing what we're
sure.
doing.
Sure, added impetus to what you're doing.
Correct.
The school, as the school teaching kitchen is now organized, is part of a farm-to-table process, you might call it, that is supported by a number of organizations. What is it like to have all these other organizations? You're not, in other words, you're not operating in a vacuum. You're operating in a growing sea of structures that support the kinds of things you're trying to do.
Well, I think it's an eye-opening experience for our kids, right? At the end of the day, when you're an educator, you're there for your students. You're there to elevate education. We get to do it through food and serve our community. And to have people across the province support us and recognize us and deliver these beautiful ingredients just heightens the experience for students. So it's a big family, really.
The support in this community is quite steep. Like directly in this community, there's the Shishwap Food Action Society. Serena Kaner speaks often about the school food program when mm-hmm. she's talking to the public, and also within, she and Melanie Bennett have been on this show a number of times, and they, Serena in particular, makes reference constantly to what's going on. And I must admit, she speaks very highly of you. You'll just have to put up with that. And then you have this kind of network of food supplying through, in the case of the food supply here, it's Valley Direct, which is in Armstrong, I believe.
Armstrong,
yeah.
Yes.
And then Sysco, which is a well-known large-scale yes. food supplier. And you bring food sometimes in your own vehicle.
Sometimes. specialty ingredients. So I go home to Vancouver. Our home is in Surrey. My husband's there, and our little boy is there. Mm. My daughter and I are here. And so if there's certain things or certain ingredients we don't get in Salmon Arm, it really comes from there because you find lots of that.
So tell our waiting listeners what you bring in your vehicle. Special.
I'm not going to share all
my secrets. You're not at liberty to say.
I'm not going to share all my secrets with you, Warren. No, just specialty ingredients. So, I mean, if there's certain things students need, certain spices and that you cannot get here, or with Sysco and with Valley Direct, you have to buy the cases, and it doesn't make sense for a small teaching kitchen. So we break it when I go home, and those shops are readily available right there. I just pick it up and bring it here.
There's an Indian food store at the foot of Fraser Street, I think, right down near the Fraser River. I remember going there, and it was just an acre of spices and exotic vegetables from India. I'm sure you know which one it is. The BC Agriculture in the Classroom Foundation, the acronym I was desperately trying to remember, they've grown quite substantially. Now there are 77,200 culinary arts students, and then there's 65,000 students who are able to eat local BC-grown and locally prepared food. And that's what you do in the kitchen here that
yes.
you supervise. And it's all from scratch.
Everything.
Why don't you just outline what that means? You know, the food comes in the door, and then what happens?
So teaching kitchens, because we are... We of course have recipes there, but teaching kitchens, you're teaching as you go. You're training kids with skills. So in a teaching kitchen, really, you're given the luxury of really designing it the way you wish to have it. And because I am very keen on fresh food, food must be served hot, it must be served plated, there's a certain elements put together. I try to heighten the education part for students, mixed with, of course, theory. So we create. For our breads are made in-house, our doughs are made in-house, our desserts are made in-house, all our sauces are made in-house. We bulk prep that. What else do we make? We do fresh smoothies. I mean, you name it, we try to create that. So food comes in. Students get a chance to actually create the menu. They get to be a part of that. Through projects, they also learn how to food cost. You know, that's a big, there's a big factor to that. You don't just create. You need to know how much does it cost to make that dish.
Sure.
And I think that preps them for various things in their life, and they attain skills.
It sort of combines practicality with artistry.
Correct.
There's a mixture of skills that you learn, plus doing things on time.
Yes.
I just remind listeners again that I'm speaking with culinary arts teacher Nimi Erasmus from the who's working out the Samarm Secondary Sullivan campus. So let's step back a little bit and look at the sort of bigger picture and the whole culture of food preparation. Now, when we were speaking earlier, I brought forward a kind of stereotypical view of what industrial and commercial kitchens are all about, you know, people yelling at each other and things flying all over the place and people saying, no, we can't do it that way, we've got to do this. And you were quite clear that there's a sense of change in that culture, that commercial culture of food preparation.
Yes. I think over time things have indeed changed. I think that's not just in the kitchen, that's really everywhere. If as chefs we are giving an image where this is what the industry is like, I think that's not the correct image, and that needs to change, because we have young people now going into those professions, and I'm a firm believer also you got to lead by example, right? If I'm projecting that within my own kitchen, then students are not going to feel safe. And our number one priority are those kids, their emotional well-being and their educational development.
And what are ways that you have found work? I mean, I'm not suggesting you're deliberate about it, but that over time that work for you and for them to make them feel welcome, to make them feel like this is a good place to work, not just an employment setting, but a place you'd like to go to work.
It's all about relationships, Warren, right? It's before education comes that relationship. That student coming to school is coming with something or a few things. For our kids, SAS is a safe place, and that's in every classroom. That's not just in my respective space. And I think we, as a faculty of educators, we really strive. You know, if there's a student that's struggling, everyone comes around that student, and that student is felt supported, and you know we ensure that happens. In the kitchen environment, of course, it's still there, but because it's so busy, students are very engaged in what is happening from 9:15 till 3:30, and if there's events, it's just nonstop, and so they really get that feel of, my goodness, we're at work, right?
Yes. So we're living in the real world.
But it's still that relationship. And I work alongside my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just, oh, go do this or this needs to get done. I will work alongside of them. And that's when conversations happen. And that's where the relationship actually gets built.
The other thing that I think is very interesting about preparing food is that while there's a lot of science behind it, it's also a manual skill and it's a practical skill. And not so long ago, maybe a few decades ago, there was a sense that you had to be educated in some kind of academic, pure learning kind of environment. That's fading away as people realize that practical skills like the preparation of food using some fairly advanced scientific principles, I mean, they're not always talked about as science, but they are there, such as keeping instruments and equipment clean and sterilized, that kind of thing. Is there a change that students are now starting, and their families, their parents are starting to appreciate that learning skills and gaining expertise in an area like the preparation of food is actually, it's not only legitimate, it's also maybe essential to how society develops?
Yes, indeed. And I mean, cuisine itself is so broad. There's so much to learn with different cuisines, so many skills within that sector. And I think just by being supported by organizations like BCATC, our administration, a different farm, the whole farm to school, farm to table that has really taken off in BC schools. It's just more for our students to be able to say, hey, I could possibly pursue this as a career, get into the hospitality industry. Right. And the industry itself has changed. So much has changed within the industry, within the food industry.
What are some of the major changes?
Well, this is a shift of food and food knowledge and skills. And, you know, we have a lot of young people now getting into that field where it wasn't like that, you know, like you say, a few decades ago.
Yeah, and the numbers are definitely going up all the time from, you know, 7,000 to 150,000. It seems to me that this is an area of the human community that is finally coming into its own. Instead of being a kind of activity that is fuel to do other things, it's actually a goal in and of itself, the preparation of interesting food, of culturally diverse food, of food that is prepared with pure and unsullied ingredients, that kind of thing.
It's also passion, right? And that starts at a very young age. You know, you train them and you lead by that example and you show them. And I feel like I've been able to do that because this is home ground. And I was given that freedom to actually engage with these kids and bring them to the table. And I mean, every block, you know, whenever we do theory, kids are mesmerized by what you can do with such little, or what you can do with food itself. And
in terms of sort of food biochemistry and
Gastronomic cuisine, for one.
Sure.
Just plating, you know, you can actually make fish and chips look good. You can actually make, I know it sounds ridiculous, but you can actually deconstruct that plate. You can actually heighten it, and you can actually do several different things with pasta. You don't have to pull it out from a bag and put it in water. Do you know what I mean?
There's a picture simple on the internet of you holding a skein of flour flattened out into a train, and I guess it's a student at the end of the pasta-generating machine.
The pasta maker.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
But also, isn't it that we're starting to realize that we're integrated with the biological world, that we are biological beings, and what we put into our bodies has a big impact on all of our lives, on our physical health, on our mental health, and our enjoyment of life.
Yes. And I think, again, I'm going to take this back to sort of how we've been supported by these kind of, you know, even what Shushwap Food Action Society is doing and how they are raising awareness of growing your own and taking that to the table, bringing that to the table and looking after each other. I'm very big on healthy food. Mm. I think it's really important that we educate the next generation because they are going to lead. So I think that is important, of teaching them how do you cook good food. How do you take care of yourself? How do you take care of your families? And how do you serve one another?
If I were to tell you that my benighted profession, medical profession, still doesn't teach nutrition in medical school, there is no formal teaching around nutrition, food preparation, food quality, food ingredients, food contamination, food waste, it's left out of the curriculum. As somebody who's teaching about food science and food preparation, the practicalities and the theory, what would you like to tell my profession about how it trains doctors?
Honestly, I don't really know too much about that. I think that's really important, especially when you're taking care of another patient. I think everybody needs to learn at least basic skills on food preparation. Mm. I think it could be life-saving in certain situations.
Oh, indeed. And it is. I mean, there's good evidence for that.
And I do, again, because I'm not in that field or I don't know too much about it, I do think that it is a must in, I would say, in that field.
Well, I can tell you that within, as a practitioner, I see the evidence of poor food quality on health and good food quality on health. And the difference can be quite dramatic. Hospital food has become notorious for, there are studies showing the longer you're stuck in the hospital, the worse your health becomes because it just isn't high quality. And also institutions that have taken on food the way you're preparing it for the students in high school, that kind of food causes improved health, that people spend less time in hospital and they get healthier as they're in the hospital, and they appreciate the fact that the food they're getting is tasty and they know it's nutritious as opposed to it's all packaged units coming from afar. What about your students as they go through the culinary arts course? What kind of feedback do you get from them about both the experience that they're having in the school, but also how it's influencing their future attitudes towards food and towards food preparation, not just as a job, but just overall in terms of their view of the world?
I find it quite amusing, actually. Every summer when we're on break, there'll be one or two students that'll send me a picture, "Chef, I made this at home, and I made it for my family, and slightly burnt this, but then I covered it up with this because you taught us that." I'm like, oh dear. And you know, they'll send those pictures. I find them very engaged. Mm-hmm. I find them, there's a different sense of gratitude amongst this specific generation. And they are very aware of their surroundings. And I find them very engaged. Mm-hmm. Quite often I hear that they're more engaged in the kitchen than they are in some other academic courses. But, you know, the students, especially, that they don't necessarily thrive academically, they'll do really well in this because they're hands-on learners. Mm-hmm. And they have the opportunity to do that and take that with them. And the feedback I almost every semester, every term ends, and I talk to my kids, okay, what did you find that was challenging? What do we change? And we work collectively and we work together. You know, kids that come from a different background, they get a chance to celebrate their culture within our community. We just had Eid, which is obviously the Muslim
yes,
New Year.
Indeed.
And we have some students who are Muslims. And so they came back to me and said, "Thank you for sharing that." And they had a chance to partake in that. And we did it school-wide through food. We didn't advertise it, but we did it. We cooked their food throughout.
Have there been an opportunity to cook food that would be considered part of indigenous culture?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. I think we have quite a few students. Actually, today is an indigenous prodi, which I'll be heading there in shortly, and I'm attending a session on foraging indigenous plants. So we get to bring that as well.
You know, I'm a little old to go to high school, but I think that if I were a little younger and I had been in high school and there had been a culinary arts program at school I went to, which I can assure you there was not, I would be delighted to have you as my teacher. I'm sure I'd learn a lot, but also I'd learn a lot about human relationships and how important that is mm-hmm. in a working setting and how valuable that is for students today to see a teacher who teaches side by side with them as opposed to behind a lectern in the front of the class. Now, as you said, many of your students learn better that way, but I think a lot of people learn very mm-hmm. well that way. In my profession, they say, watch once, do once, teach once. That's a little ambitious, But the principle, I think, is there, and that is that you teach best by being side by side with your students. Thank you very much, Nimi, for coming on the show today.
It was my pleasure.
A delight to have you here with us.
Thank you for having me, Warren.